Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Radio Show. This is the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any questions or comments to make during this broadcast, you can feel welcome to write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to make an announcement or two. I would like to remind people that our healing weekend is forming and getting together, and it's going to be the last weekend in April, right before the start of May, April 29th and 30th here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And as always, people who come to this either in the beginning of their healing process, middle, or going towards the end, but all of us come out of these healing weekends much stronger, much more healed, and in a direction that will really help you throughout the rest of the year. There's nothing more validating than being in a room full of women where you from all over the country and other parts of the world who join together and who can support whatever you're feeling without ever saying a word. So if you are interested in joining the Healing Weekend this year, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And I'll be more than happy to give you the information. So let me talk to you a little bit for a few minutes about my guest for tonight, and tell you a little bit of the background story on how I so lucked out that every now and then you just feel so lucky in your life that you're able to, you know, find people who inspire you and who motivate you, because, you know, I'm pretty long time doing this, so it takes a lot to inspire me. But an article came my way through one of the women in our in the UK, sent me this article for a support group, and it was by a young woman named Kristen Cowbley, who's out of Atlanta, and she's involved in voice and stage. She's an actress. She's a narrator, a voiceover coach, a writer, and a director, and so she has a lot of great experience. But it takes a lot for me to really be impressed by anyone because I've read everything, I've heard it all. You know, after all these years, it takes a lot for something to just kick me and say, oh, my goodness. But this woman wrote an article that just wowed me away. So I do want to say she's my new literary hero. So, Kristen, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you so much for having me. This is fantastic.
Yes, and I've not only read this article, but another article that you've written, and your writing is just beautiful, and I'm waiting to be your first customer in your book that will be coming out, hopefully, soon. And this writing talent and your thoughts, I just met my straight wife soulmate, so I'm so excited that you were willing to come on our show. And I want to thank Terry from the UK who really, like I say, threw it out to us out there in this beautiful article. And I've read many, but this one really, I said, oh, my goodness, listen to this woman. Her words are just so amazing. So maybe first you could tell us a little bit about you before I go through the article.
Absolutely. Let me just tell you, I'm honored to be here, Bonnie. Thank you so much for having me and to talk to your guest. And let me just say I'm getting over a little bit of a cough and cold that's been lingering for a while. So if I have to clear my throat for your guests, I apologize.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
I am a straight wife, and I've been divorced now for almost 10 years. That's actually 9 years in a couple of days. I married when I was 23 to a man that I met when I was doing high school theater at the age of 17. We started dating when I was 19, and when I was 32, I had a deep-seated feeling for a long time, but I couldn't keep it down anymore that things were not right, and I separated from him and left the marriage. And it was not, ironically, until last year. I knew things were wrong and things were off in the marriage, but it wasn't until last year, almost a year ago at Thanksgiving, that his second ex-wife reached out to me on Facebook. You're not going to believe it, Bonnie. It's just crazy to tell me that he was unequivocally gay and that he had come out to her and that they were getting a divorce. And she and I developed a friendship and a relationship. And through that piece of truth, which I had been denied for 8 long years of my recovery, and this is a bear to recover from, that one final piece of truth that I know a lot of women never get really made the difference in this last year of my life in terms of completing the cycle of recovery and completing the cycle of healing. So I'm very grateful for that, and I'm grateful to his second ex-wife for being my sister in this and for reaching out to me and giving me a piece of information that was absolutely critical for me to heal.
And I think that's such an important statement because many times this question comes up within our group, and I think you may feel the same way I do. When women say to me, because many of these men do go out and they do get married again, you know, they're repeated offenders as far as marriage is concerned, and they say, well, do you think we should tell the wife that what's going on? Mm-hmm. And I say, well, I think that wouldn't you like to know, or somebody would have told you? And people feel very torn because they think, on one hand, you know, they're not going to be believed, or their ex-husband's going to say she's a troublemaker and she makes up stuff about me. But I say this kind of information, when you do have it, it is so important to let the other person know, because even if she doesn't believe you when you're telling it to her, when things start, you know, unraveling and falling apart, at least she'll know what the problem is. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I can tell you from my personal experience that the marriage was like swimming in an ether of doubt and questioning. I could sense that something was off. I could never quite put my finger on it. The term crazy making, I'm sure you've heard many, many times. And to have that piece of information from her, and I had intuited that he might be gay. I had suspected it on and off. I'd even asked him about it during the marriage, and at the very end of the marriage, the night that I separated him, I asked him one final time, are you gay? And, of course, he denied. So my intuition was right on the money. And now a lot of women might not be in that space where they're intuiting that, or they might be in denial about little bits of information that are coming their way that don't quite add up. But I can tell you that in my own personal journey, having the truth, the bald-faced, unequivocal truth, was the difference that put the last piece in place for me. It was kind of like I still had this sort of open wound, even 8 years long, because this kind of a marriage, I mean, I'm sure you know, women, I had deep, deep depression. I had the 2 years that I was absolutely non-functional pretty much for a two-year period. Mm-hmm. I had PTSD diagnosed by my psychiatrist on medication. You know, this kind of thing where something is happening to you. You can't identify it. You can't. I called it in one of my writings the carbon monoxide of secrets, because like carbon monoxide gas, you can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, but something is harming you in the atmosphere. And having that last piece of truth from her, when she told me after my initial reaction, which was rather visceral physically, it was like things just chunked into place in my brain. I could almost feel it in my body, the truth of it landing. And then later, the truth of the fact that he knew before we were married, conversations flitted back, conversations from the time of our engagement that knocked me a little funny at the time, but I was 19 or 20 or 23, and I was an innately trusting person, and what he told me I believed because I was a generous-hearted person, and I wanted to believe my husband, my fiancé, when he told me what he said was his sexuality. So I think that truth, I would advise, every situation is always individual, but there's nothing like the truth for someone. And even if they aren't in a place where they can hear it, and even if they actually balk at it and back up from that truth and aren't in a place where they can accept it, and they may even demonize you for telling it or bringing it to them, if you can stand in that, and if you can hold in that, and as long as you're sure that it is the truth, it's a tremendous gift. I'm deeply thankful to my ex-husband, second ex-wife, for shedding light on something that I may never, without that, have had clarity on.
Mm-hmm. It makes a whole difference in your whole perspective in life. You know, when you don't know what you're dealing with, and you're doing a lot of self-blame because this is the direction that the issue becomes, especially when your husband doesn't want to be honest with you and he will blame you for the problems that you're having in your marriage, and you start questioning yourself in every possible way and blaming yourself, and really does affect your ability to have future relationships, wouldn't you say so?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I left that marriage. I've been single for the most part for 9 years. I've had relationships with men, but none long-term. They've been more about exploring my sexuality than actually exploring relationship, because I came out of that marriage with such a sense of damage. I mean, I came out of that marriage feeling like I was damaged goods and no real sense of how to heal myself. And the one thing that I came out of that marriage saying almost immediately was, I'm not doing this ever again. And I will do whatever it takes to get to the bottom of why I entered this marriage, why it happened the way it did. And I got to tell you, Bonnie, I spent 8 years and a lot of money exploring my own psyche, my own psychology. Why did I marry this guy? How did I get into this? That sort of thing, because I was determined to take responsibility. And I took a lot of responsibility, but there was always that missing piece of the thing that I never had responsibility for. And so the truth was what actually really flipped that for me. And then once that happened, once I had that information, I feel more free to date now, if that should come. It's not a top priority for me, But I can tell you that the way I felt damaged after the relationship ended, I mean, I will be quite frank, Bonnie, I packed on 100 pounds just to, I think, as a sort of psychic pressure, psychic protection, really, almost against the relationship, because as a cocooning and as a protection and as almost a psychic blanket to say, you know, I'm going to deal with what's inside of me for a while, and to kind of really say to myself, I'm not going to get into another relationship until the relationship with myself is rebuilt, restored, and that the great love of my life is myself. And that has been the most miraculous journey out of all of this, is that I can honestly tell you, you know, I know a lot of us look for a relationship again. We all do. It's human, and of course I would love to be in a relationship, but I stand now a single woman knowing that even if I never find a partner for the rest of my life, I'm going to have a damn good life. So it's been a tremendous gift of healing to have that truth, and it's also been it's been remarkable, frankly, to be able to take the blame off of myself, to say that there were things that, yeah, there were maybe some wonky reasons why I got married in the first place to anybody at the age that I got married to, for sure, but this was something that I never could have seen coming, and it's not something that I ever could have anticipated, and I know that.
And you know what, Kristen? I always tell people that in a regular marriage where you have two straight people and you hear that it takes two to make a marriage or two to break a marriage and that there's never just one fault, and people go away with that impression, yes, everybody has faults. But in this particular situation, I say that women cannot take any of the fault, because you don't know what you're dealing with and you don't know how it's going to affect you, and you never know how you could have been if you were in a marriage to somebody who was nurturing you and helping you grow instead of trying to stunt you and make you feel terrible about yourself because they can't, you know, live up to the responsibility of telling the truth. So I always say in these marriages, it only takes one thing to ruin the marriage, not two people, one thing, and that's, you know, the homosexuality. So I think a lot of times we self-blame ourselves for so many years, and that's the tragedy. I don't think gay husbands understand this. They think that once they find their way in life and that they come out and now they're all excited, that they found themselves and they can be honest, they can't understand why we can't be cheering for them and why it's taking us so long to come to terms with them. And they don't get it.
There's so much in there, Bonnie. So a couple of things that, you know, in responding to what you were just talking about, right off the top of my head, one of the issues that I think is so critical here is we're not just talking about a marriage, exactly as you say, we're not just talking about a marriage that fell apart because two people were incompatible or they both messed up, or I, of course, have flaws as a wife. I can look back on my years as a wife and say, you know, I was not a great wife in that situation. I can also look back on those years and say I was an amazing wife in that particular situation. And had the marriage been normal, who knows how it might have played out. But I think that the thing, you know, I mean, who knows how it might have played out. We might have grown together. I might have had the opportunity to see the ways in which I was a bit of a shallow wife at times, or the ways in which I was a bit of a demeaning wife at times. And I could do those things, absolutely. But those are things that happen in a normal marriage. And we're not dealing with all of the information when something like this happens. I think the most traumatic thing for me, and when I put this together, it was a huge piece of information, was the fact that consent was denied me in my marriage in terms of what kind of marriage I was in. I never had the opportunity to consent. I would never have consented to a mixed orientation marriage because that's not the kind of marriage I wanted to be in. It's not the kind of marriage I want to be in now, if I ever do that, if I ever decide to get married again, which jury's out on that. I might not need to. But I also think that I never would have consented to have sex with him had I known that he was gay. So there's a deep sense of violation of a person's agency, a person's sovereignty, because consent has been taken away from you. And that is incredibly, I'm not shy to say, enraging. I have never, and I want to say this to your listeners, I think maybe part of the tone that they could hear in the article that I wrote, those who have read it, is that the rage that we feel at being used, and we were used. And I think that it is okay to own that and claim that. I say unequivocally in my marriage, I was absolutely used. And this is a high level of using another human being. Let's not make any mistake. We are used as human shields, maybe for reasons that might be understandable, but we are used. And we're not crazy for thinking and feeling that way. And it's really, really hard to recover from being used to this level because we are objectified. You know, there's the term beard. And a lot of people really don't like it. And I don't identify as a beard. I know that I am more than a beard. But at the same time, the thing that the term beard does capture is the deep objectification of another human being. And that is exactly the kind of the depth of my rage, which I couldn't even let begin to bubble up for a couple of years. For 2-3 years after the divorce, I was still trying to make him a nice guy. 2-3 years after the divorce, I was still trying to think well of him. And I needed to go through a period where I allowed that rage to come up at being used, at having my sexuality damaged, hurt, abused, because the anger actually is the beginnings of self-esteem. It's not destructive anger. It's justified anger. And for me, that anger was saying, no, this was not okay. You were not entitled to do this to me. You were not entitled to commandeer my life. You were not entitled to hide behind me. You were not entitled to take my sexuality and throw it out the window. You were not entitled to never give me pleasure. And that is the beginning. That anger was the beginning of me saying, I am entitled to agency, to consent, to a healthy, happy, pleasurable sexuality with a man that I have an honest, intimate, truthful relationship with. Those were all things that he chose through his behavior to deny me unequivocally. And so no one gets, and we have to be really clear, no one gets to do this to another person. It's not okay.
Well, one of the things that I always say about anger is that when women go through that anger phase, it means that they're starting to fight back and stand up for themselves because they've been pushed down for so long. And they've been really, their feelings in general, I know that maybe you can confirm this if it happened with you. My feelings when I was going through this were very suppressed because I just couldn't feel anymore. I was existing, but I wasn't living. I was getting through the motions day to day. But I didn't have any, I was afraid to feel anything because whatever I would feel wasn't a good feeling. So I just learned how to suppress my feelings and to exist rather than live. Did you kind of feel that way too?
I absolutely did. I think that existing is a beautiful way to put it. I would say that I was in existence towards the end of my marriage. I remember we actually had a gorgeous garden in Atlanta, a rose garden at our house. And we had bought a 1920s bungalow, and we were doing the yuppie thing where we were fixing it up one room at a time, and the last room in the house was the kitchen, and we hadn't done anything with the kitchen. And I was in that garden one day, and I was working with the plants, and I remember saying to myself, oh, my God, what happens when you get finished with the kitchen? Then you're going to have to deal with your marriage. Uh-huh. And I had just been in a place of sheer existence for so long on automatic pilot because the thing that I couldn't put my finger on, it was exhausting to try and constantly get at that. Every 6 months, he and I would bring up our sex life. And every 6 months, I mean, the level of non-communication, the level of not even talking about it, the level of we couldn't even say the word sex in our house. We had to have a euphemism for it. We didn't talk when we did have sex. There was no communication. I mean, we really had sex in a very messed up way. That took a lot of time to recover from. And then after the divorce, I would say the profound feelings, overwhelming feeling I had rather than existence, but was disorientation. I didn't know which end was up. I'm naturally a person that will take a lot of responsibility for things and a lot of blame. So I was trying every which way to add it up so that I'd made a mistake, I'd done something terribly wrong. I needed to figure out what it was inside of me that was damaged, that was flawed. I needed to fix myself. I had no idea which end was the sky. And that was a long, long journey to crawl out from that kind of a place because it's so confusing. I mean, the term gaslighting gets thrown around a lot today, and I'm actually glad it does because the technique is used so brilliantly with husbands like mine where the object is to throw you off the trail of their homosexuality. So
yes, I call that gay lighting. That's my terminology for it. And that, well, that's what I call it, because that's when, you know, gay men are trying to fool their wives into thinking that they're not gay, when they're
right.
actually finding out all this information that gay light them. And,
right.
you know, I just feel that this takes such a mental strain when, you know, you keep looking for something that's so well hidden and how they are able to just keep you guessing every moment and blaming yourself. But I think I'd like to read your article now, if it's okay with you, Kristen, because then we'll take a lot of conversation from there. So
Absolutely.
I'm reading Kristen's article, and not to get into why the article was written so much, you know, but the feelings that she had, that's what really just moved me over. But it was in response to an article that Rick Clemens, who's a therapist for gay men in California, wrote. And he published an article, and this is how it starts off. And the title is, Frankly, My Dear, I Am the Victim of Homophobia, Too. And it says, recently, author Rick Clemens published an article in the Huffington Post, Frankly, My Dear, Gay Men Marry Straight Women, Here's Why. And that was from 7/19/16. In the article, Clemens asserted, if you haven't lived and breathed sexual orientation confusion, felt gay shame, or laid awake at night wishing that you really could pray the gay away, then honestly, you have nothing to contribute to this discussion. As the ex-wife of a gay man who was in denial during our marriage but came out after divorcing his second wife, I know that I do have something to contribute to the discussion, and I have earned my place in the conversation. It's an utter travesty that homophobia still exists in our culture to such a degree that self-loathing and the fear of still infect perfectly wonderful people who happen to be LGBT. Recently, the Archbishop of Philadelphia said that gay couples should be abstinent. Preachers still promote disproven and insulting reparative therapy and advise gay men to marry straight women, as if our lives are suitable sacrifices on the altar of their religious homophobia. This is baldly discriminatory and deeply harmful to the LGBT people. But when my ex-husband chose to marry me knowing he was gay, he compounded the harm, spreading the trauma and devastation to two lives rather than confining it to one. I am the victim of homophobia too. Many LGBT people may not want to acknowledge this, thinking it detracts from their very real suffering. I certainly understand that they may not want to share that particular medal in the oppression Olympics. I'm not invalidating the brutal homophobia that sent people like my ex-husband so deeply into his closet that he had to use me as its door. I'm saying that my life was ripped apart by that homophobia too, and I am in pain and very angry, very, very angry. My justifiable anger should not be confused with homophobia. I am not, nor have I ever been homophobic. I have officiated at LGBT weddings and count LGBT people among my closest colleagues and friends. This shared trauma should make us allies against the injustice of homophobia and its consequences. But often, criticism of behavior like my ex-gay husband, but like my ex-husband's deceiving a straight spouse into marriage, is spun as anti-gay rhetoric, and that is dishonest, dismissive, and divisive. I unequivocally sympathize with the struggles of LGBT men and women, although I don't know what it's like to question my orientation. But I do know what it's like to have my own sexuality deeply shamed, rejected, and damaged. Let me explain. I was abjectly and repeatedly sexually rejected by my ex-husband in the most intimate way a person can be rejected. But I had no idea why. I intuited that he might be gay. I even prayed that he was, because it would have explained the soul-crushing rejection. I asked him on different occasions. He always denied it. He left me to guess, to ruminate, to wander in a desert with no answers, to live in an ether of doubt and questioning. And he left me to conclude I was the problem. My body image suffered, my self-esteem collapsed, my soul was damaged, my trust obliterated. I was devastated not to feel desired by my own husband. I was devastated by my own husband did not want my touch. My sexuality was a threat to him, a reminder of his own homosexuality, which he was desperately running from. So he had to shame my sexuality and shut it down. He did the exact thing to me that society did to him. And almost a decade post-divorce, I am still recovering from this form of sexual abuse, this gaslighting, this mind fuck. Clemens is correct that LGBTQ people are often cruelly shamed and belief poisoned into heteronormative marriages. But I take exception to his inclusion of the term force. As the ex-wife of a gay man, I can say with confidence that I was forced into a mixed orientation marriage against my will, without my knowledge or consent. I did not know he was gay at the time of our marriage, but he did. I would not have married him had I known the truth. I was forced, not him. My ex-husband was not forced to lie to me. He was not forced to marry me, and he was not forced to stay in the closet, not by me at least. Because of my experience, I question Clemens' narrative that gay men who marry straight women are merely the victims of cultural and familial homophobia and are entirely without responsibility or culpability for these deceptive marriages and their fallout. The homophobia of our culture, vast and grotesque as it is not an excuse to rob someone of agency, truth, and the ability to consent. It is a definition of entitlement for one person to use another as a beard, a shield, and a prop. My ex-husband stole years of my life, depriving me of the love, sexual intimacy, and pleasure I might have found with a heterosexual husband. And he did this knowingly. He is responsible for that choice. In a somewhat cavalier tone, Clemens continues, so the burning question that some of you may still be asking is, why do gay men marry straight women? Frankly, my dear, because it takes time to live the life you're meant to live. And that was a quote of Rick Clemens. Okay, fair enough, I get that. But what happens in the meantime to the straight spouses waiting for the truth while their gay spouses have experiences yet not experienced as years of their lives are sacrificed on the altar of their gay spouse's self-discovery? It is the straight spouse's life disposable because it takes time to live the life you're meant to live. I cannot imagine anything so disregarding, so dismissive, and self-serving. Oh, wait, yes, I can, because I've lived it. Yes, it is true that true freedom comes from trusting yourself enough to be yourself, but let's encourage each other not to learn that lesson at the expense of someone else's life. And those are your beautiful, beautiful words that really hit so many different issues. So
thank you, Bonnie.
I mean, just the way that you wrote them.
I would love to ask you what you responded to in the article, and then maybe we can talk about that.
I'm sorry, ask about?
Oh, I was wondering, I wanted to ask you what you responded to in particular about the article, so viscerally,
I think,
and then
what,
maybe we can talk about that.
I think what really moved me the most is how many times you just feel so frustrated because with the lesbian gay community, you know, I really always felt there should be more support from them as far as acknowledging what our pain is. And as you said, you were an advocate for all your life, you know, for LGBT. And I think that you will find that almost all of the women that are part of this network are very pro-gay before they get married. And I do believe that there is a, you know, there is a prototype of woman that a gay man approaches to be his wife. And one of the, I wrote about that in my first book, The Gay Husband Checklist, you know, and some of the things they look for in a woman. And one is that a woman has to be very accepting of this because that's what they're seeking. Just in case things mm-hmm. don't work out quite the way they're hoping, you know, that that understanding, loving person will understand mm-hmm. and love them and not to make their lives miserable. So I'm not saying they purposely go out, but there is some kind of subconscious level where they're looking for somebody who has that. And so I think that most of us are very pro-gay. I mean, most of the women I speak to through the years have gay friends, gay family members, but it's totally different when it comes to having a gay husband. But if you say that, once again, like you've mentioned in here, I think what you address is that, you know, people feel that we're in some way homophobic if we bring up the fact that we don't want to have a gay husband. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I have found it just in my own journey to begin speaking about this. I can tell that my own fear and my own hesitation, maybe, for example, posting something on Facebook about my experience of being married to a gay man, or even intimating that I might have been angry about that, or intimating about what my particular experience was with the secrecy and the gaslighting and the damage that was done. I might have dipped my toe into that water so slowly and tenuously for fear of backlash or being seen as homophobic. And because I love my people, they're my artist people, and I think we should all be free to be who we are, and I think we should all be free to love who we love and marry who we want to marry and have sex with who we want to have sex with. So it hurts me deeply to even be thought for a moment that me standing and saying this was not okay is the same as it's not okay for you to be gay, because those two things are not equivalent. I am not saying, and I don't think many straight wives or straight men, straight male spouses are saying it's not okay for you to be gay. That's not the issue. What's not okay is that my life was commandeered for a reason that I was not told about. And my life was put on hold where I was denied an opportunity to have a loving, fulfilling, sexually pleasurable relationship, all the things that we talked about before. And I think we have to get to a place where we can start to even share some of these uncomfortable feelings and say, you know what, this really damaged me. This really hurt my life measurably for 2 decades. The decade that I was in the relationship and the decade following, like, 2 decades of my life have been consumed with this particular piece of my life's journey. And I think that we should be able to say and can start to stand to say that, you know, I can express anger about this. I can express the injustice. I can express I had depression, PTSD. This was the fallout, the trauma that I suffered from this. And still say, and of course I don't want to see my LGBTQ brothers and sisters forced back into a closet by a cultural or political climate that damages them for who they innately are, because we all get damaged by that. I think that's my broader point, is that this should bring us together. This should bring us to a place of we are on the same team. We can listen to each other's uncomfortable feelings. But I think that, you know, it's really interesting. A few months ago, I think I sent you another article I'd written, Councilman Baca, New York City councilman. There's an article about it in the New York Times. Your listeners can read if they want to. Councilman Baca, James Baca, came out of the closet. And the article was about how he'd come out of closet on Twitter and how he was receiving lots of praise and lots of support. Great. And then at the very bottom of the article, it says nothing about his wife, merely that he is getting a divorce. And I think that that exemplifies for me how the straight spouse is simply a non-person in so much of this. And that cannot continue to happen, because I think we need to speak loudly about how damaging this is, because we want this to stop. We want it to stop for LGBTQ people or people who are questioning their orientation. We want them to not feel like they have to go into a heteronormative marriage because society is pressuring them in a particular direction. And we want for the straight spouse not to be so deeply damaged by a marriage like this. And I think we have to talk about just how absolutely it is a devastating kind of marriage. I will share this anecdote. Right after my divorce, I was seeking any kind of resource I could possibly find, and I went to divorce care, which some of your listeners may have heard of, and I had no idea what it was. I know it was at the United Methodist Church of Decatur, and I know that three other women were in that class with me for the summer that I participated in that. And the three other women and I, we kind of bonded, and we would go have cocktails, and we would go do things together. And I remember thinking, why are they not more damaged? Why are they not more broken? Why are they not more, what is it about my marriage? They just seem like, it didn't work out, I'm moving on. And here I am, barely able to get up off the floor. Here I am, not able to stand in the shower. Here I am, not able to dress myself. Here I am, what? And then, of course, that compounded the sense of isolation and fear and the sense of being broken. Like, I can't even handle my divorce right. I couldn't handle my marriage right. I can't even handle my divorce right. So, and these other women are, like, getting on with it, and I'm stuck. And then, of course, it's compounded by family pressures who, you know, you might have a family member, a parent, or someone say, God, it's been 5 years. Why isn't she over it yet? Or it's been 10 years or what have you. And the thing people don't understand, these are not normal divorces. They're not normal marriages. Even when there's infidelity and the gay husband goes and sleeps with men and you find out about it, as did not happen to me, but it actually happened, not that I knew of. Now, it's possible he was sleeping with men while he was married to me. I don't have any proof of that, but he was doing that with his second ex-wife, right? And it's like, you know, these are not normal infidelities. People say, well, at least he didn't leave you for another woman. Well, no. Actually, what this means is that did he ever even love me? Like, I question everything going back. So when I found out that he was gay, then it was like, oh, yeah, I remember every single card he wrote me for a birthday, every single, and that was all, in my mind, it went, that was all a lie. That was all pretty language. That was all. Now, he may have loved me in a way, but I can, the truth of my marriage is that I don't believe and feel in retrospect my ex-husband was actually capable of genuine love and intimacy. There were other issues going on there, and I will stand by that truth in my own marriage. But I think that the broader truth is these marriages are not normal. The damage and fallout is not normal. And I want to say, if I can communicate anything to your listeners, is that it takes as long as it takes. And if that's 5 years, if that's 10 years, it's not about wallowing or staying stuck. It's about having permission to allow the process of healing to be what it's going to be. And that's really, really hard because a lot of times we watch other people moving on after divorces. They're married within 2 years. It was kind of funny. I really thought at one moment, I thought, I'll be in a relationship with, okay, that's fine. I'm going to be in a new relationship in 2 years. And that was my, quote, unquote, my little goal for myself. And it was almost like the universe or spirit or whoever, I'm a spiritual person, so for me that term is spirit. Spirit's like, ha-ha, no, you're not going to have that. You've got work to do. So you've got some healing to do. And so I also hope that your listeners, women, also take comfort and take solace in the fact that this healing journey, if you let it, can be the most amazing moment of self-discovery and intimacy with the self and creating an opportunity to be your own love of your life. And
I think that's such an important part, too. I think that, you know, a lot of what I write about is that you can't hurry recovery and that certainly in your first year of recovery, no matter how anxious you are to prove and validate yourself as a woman, it is the absolute worst time to get involved with someone because of the fact that you have to first learn who you are. And that can take years. And I tell women, you can't be pressured because so many of the complaints are just what you're talking about. People get tired of listening to you because they're saying, come on, what's taking you so long already? You know, this happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. Why are you still talking about it? You know, and I always say that our marriages are like other divorces with a whole lot more. So it's not like we're just getting a divorce. We have a lot of other issues that other divorced couples don't have to face. So, you know, it's years of degradation, it's years of, you know, sexual beating up, so many different areas that destroyed us as women that we have to first learn to love ourselves and trust ourselves again because, you know, you're not strong. I always tell women that predators are going to seek you out. And it doesn't mean it has to be a gay husband. There's lots of guys out there who are looking for weakened women. And they just know when you're weak and they know who to pounce in on because your desperation shows. And so you must learn to love yourself first before anybody can love you again. And you must love yourself enough to never allow yourself to go through this kind of pain with a straight man. With any kind of man, that you have to be loved and nurtured. You know, we had a woman who's part of our network, Janine Finelli, and she's been on my show a number of times. She's a health coach, and she came out of a very bad marriage, and she had these words tattooed right on her wrist, love is kind. And that's the guideline that I tell women, that if it's not kind and it's not good for you, every marriage is going to have problems, but they don't have this kind of problem, these kind of problems.
Right.
These are problems not within the realm of a normal marriage with problems, correct?
Correct. That certainly was true in my case. There was no opportunity to see. I think when I did a lot of work on myself and a lot of therapy, I could see in a way that he, had it been a normal marriage, my first husband was not really a good match for me. To begin with, I can acknowledge that. I can own that piece. But this other layer, and we might have ended up divorced anyway. It's quite possible. But this was a layer of secrecy and a layer of, and I bald faced claim it's secrecy because in my own marriage, he knew before we were married. And so I don't have any equivocation about claiming that I was lied to. And he was in denial, but he also knew. So he didn't want to be gay, but he knew he was. And so there's a level there of you don't even know who you're sleeping next to. Like the you have to recover from this time period of realizing you've been sleeping next to a stranger. You know, I had it was really interesting while I was married. I used to have a recurring nightmare, and I had a nightmare that I was being stalked by a man who wanted to do me harm. He was a shadowy figure. I'm not joking. This was my dream. He was a shadowy figure. I couldn't make him out. He wanted to do me harm, and I would turn to try to punch him or defend myself, and it was as if my arms were moving through jello. And it was the most impotent, frustrating, scary feeling. And I would have this dream repeatedly. And I remember my first psychologist, my first therapist after the divorce, she was like, well, of course, Kristen, that was your ex-husband. And I was like, oh, you know, this shadowy figure who I can't see who it is. It was the secret in my marriage. It was the secret that was intending to harm me. And this actually, my ex-husband, really and truly, he did have a sort of a sadistic streak in him, which enabled him to happily continue to deceive me. He almost got a pleasure out of it. He almost got an enjoyment out of it.
But I think that some of these guys get that pleasure because they feel that they're suffering and they're not going to do it alone. On some level, they feel that you become the keeper of the key in keeping them trapped in these marriages, even though they were the ones who married you. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden now they feel trapped, and they want that, you know, that you're now the prison warden holding a key that's not going to let them out. And the resentment turns on you, and it's so destructive. I mean, many of our women go through this.
Right.
Would you say that's something you went through as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I look back on the level of, I think the level of psychological violence, I mean, this is psychic damage to a soul on an unbelievable level. And it's a level of violation to a person's psyche to really twist them around the axle wheel that much about what is reality and what is not. And this is something he did intentionally. And I'm not saying that all gay husbands or gay spouses do that. I certainly don't believe that every single, I want to be very clear, not every gay spouse has nefarious intentions. Not every gay spouse has intentions to harm. Mine certainly did. Mine was more on that that end of the spectrum of deeply disturbed, a level of self-loathing that he siphoned off onto me. And I can understand. I mean, when you're living in that kind of level of self-loathing, it must be unbearable. It must absolutely be unbearable. But that does not make it okay what happened. And
I think also that when people are living a lie, you know, just it's very exhausting, you know, going mm-hmm. from lie to lie, trying to protect mm-hmm. who you are so that mm-hmm. people don't find out. And I think that we can all agree there are psychological reasons why people turn, but I think that for the most part, I mean, certainly men go, I don't say that all men go into these marriages looking to be destructive. I think they're trying to be not gay. I mean, I really am convinced mm-hmm. that they're hoping against hope that by marrying someone, by loving them to the best of their ability, because they're only able to mm-hmm. love in a certain way, that those feelings will go away. But I do see that on the most part, most of these husbands have tremendous frustration because they're not where they need to be. And just like you're always thinking about how to get them to make you want to have sex, they're spending just as much time thinking about how to get away with not having sex with you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're both equally thinking about it, but it's just as exhausting for them to try, you know, thinking of ways to keep saying no and not making you suspicious. So mm-hmm. you're living a lie at all times. You're living their lie with them. So naturally, you're going to have things that other couples don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing that I wanted you to get across to women is that it's okay to feel like this. It's okay to feel that. You don't have to feel guilty because you're not healing fast enough or that you're too angry. Or that you're not dealing with it the way that mature people deal with it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think the key here is intentionality. So I set an intention for myself that I was going to heal as best as I possibly could, but that I was going to take the time that it took and that I was going to also take responsibility for the process. So as I mentioned before, I did a lot of therapy. I did gestalt work. I saw my particular brand of spirituality. It's kind of, you know, out there. I saw shamans. I studied with an Argentinian shaman for 5 years. So, you know, I went all the way into my own psyche to heal it from the bottom, from the top to the bottom. And I took ownership of it. But so I think the important thing is intentionality. Like, we get to own our anger and our rage. We don't want to stay stuck there. And we have to make the distinction between, destructive anger and productive anger. We have to make the distinction between wallowing and allowing ourselves to have those depressed times that are so important. Like, we have to, I've always been a person that my depression, I have major depressive disorder, and when I when I've had relapses, I have to ride the elevator all the way to the bottom of floor in order to push up the bottom. Like, fighting the descent does not do me any good. So I give myself a lot of permission to go all the way down, knowing that I'm going to push off the bottom if I can. And so I think that's what I would say to your listeners is, yes, lots of permission to allow the process to be what it is, and if there can be an intention on top of it, an intention to heal, an intention to honor the self, an intention to fall back in love with the self, an intention to rebuild self-esteem, then all of those horrible, uncomfortable emotions are in service to that intention. All of those bad feelings, the rage, the anger, is actually in service to rebuilding self-esteem. It's the anger that says, no, that was not okay, as opposed to the anger that just seeks vengeance or just seeks to stay stuck. So if we make those distinctions between the kind of anger we're experiencing, like, okay, because absolutely, I've had moments in this process where I have just torn this man up one side, where I've gossiped about him, where I've just said every nasty, trashy thing. Absolutely, allow yourself to have those things too. And then go ahead and know that that's a bit of destructive anger, and we get to have that. But there's more work to be done in addition to that. So, and the other thing is like, we have to be really strong in that no one else gets this process like we do. And no one else, people might be looking at you, family members, et cetera. They don't get to decide when it's over for you. That was one thing. I love my father dearly, but we did have one moment where, I should have been over it by now. And I had to say, you don't get to decide when it's over for me. And so I would encourage your listeners to say to themselves, I am in control of this process, and it takes as long as it takes. And I have lots of permission to feel the full range and spectrum of everything that's coming up for me, because there's good information in there to help you heal. And obviously, support like the Bonnie Kay Network and the Straight Wives Talk Show is absolutely incredible. Like, wherever we can get support is where we need it. And sometimes we are the only ones who understand each other, and that's okay too. But in the broader conversation out there in the culture, I think that we have to hold our heads above the water and say, yeah, it's not equivalent to saying that this was not okay to have happened is not the same as saying it's not okay for somebody to be gay, because they're not equivalent. And that's, I think, the other broader point I would hope that your listeners might take away from this, is that we can be unequivocal and unapologetic in how we feel about what happened to us, and also still be unequivocal and unapologetic about our support for the LGBTQ community. And
absolutely. One thing has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, they exist at the same time, and they are not mutually exclusive. And hopefully that will bring us together, which would be my broader goal, is the healing of women and also the bringing together of the two communities.
Well, my broad goal this year is to really make an impact on my mantra of Straight Wives Matter, because I feel that we are so left in the dust, where people have no respect for straight wives, that our cause is not heard, that the media has projected the pain of the poor gay spouse who comes out after 25, 30 years. And as you mentioned, the wife is somewhere left behind in the dust. And no matter how we're portrayed, and I wrote that in my newsletter that just came out, no matter how people portray us, it's never in a really positive light. So, people start feeling, well, they deserve what they got because look at them. And we need to change that image. And I'm hoping, Kristen, that you'll be leading that charge, because certainly in your beautiful words and the way you express yourself, you're someone who could definitely make a difference with this. And I'm also hoping, as we're running out of time, because there's just so many interesting things you have to talk about, that you'll be willing to come back again soon, if that's
not
imposing too much on you.
Not at all.
Because there's so many.
This was wonderful.
I mean, I know that your words, I got so many beautiful letters already from my newsletter that came out today, last night, thanking you, thank Kristen, that you hit, the way people feel. And people will feel just so more validated by your words and listening to you tonight. I know that, in the upcoming weeks as they listen to the broadcast, I'll be sending you back some of the wonderful feedback that I get. And we haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg, as they say. So if you don't mind, I'll talk to you maybe in February. You'll do us the honor and come back to the show.
I would be absolutely honored, and I would love to do so. And perhaps if your listeners have particular questions, and we can talk about one avenue or another in more depth.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd be honored to do so.
That's wonderful. And to everybody, I just want to wish everyone happy holidays. I'm going to be off for the next 2 weeks because it's Christmas and New Year's. But we'll be coming back very shortly with our wonderful co-hosts and hostesses and wonderful guests of the upcoming year. And Kristen, you really ended the year for us with a big bang. I can't thank you enough, and I look so much forward to having you back here soon again.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Like I said,
and
you're my new literary hero now. You have to keep writing.
I will cherish that, and I will use that as the fuel to keep writing. Absolutely.
Don't worry. I'll keep sending you reminders. Worry not. So to all our listeners, thank you. Have the happiest of the time that you can. I know it's not an easy time, but I'm here for support. If you need me, write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll hook you up. And Kristen, my final words. I used to live in Decatur for a short time.
You're kidding.
No, isn't that funny?
That is really, well, there you go. Just more evidence that the universe brought us together.
I'll tell you, we were meant to meet. All right, I love you, Kristen. I'll be
love
talking
you,
to you
Thank
soon.
You.
All right, good night, everybody.